Hi, nature lovers. Welcome to another episode of Susie Swiss Cheese, heroine extraordinaire, whom we left up in the air, 24 stories to be exact, on a window ledge high above the city.
This sure is groovy up here. I feel like a sitting pigeon.
That's sitting duck, Susie.
Why should I duck?
Because there's a sitting pigeon right above you.
I think I'll move.
So Susie moves, but forgets she's sitting on the mere 6 inches of concrete, and before she knows what has happened...
Help, I'm falling!
And as Susie falls, her whole life passes before her eyes. As she passes the 23rd story, she calls for a rerun.
Help, I'm falling! Ooh, my head. Wow, I don't remember eating anything that would cause nightmares like that. Maybe it's a good thing I fell out of bed. It's almost 1 o'clock, and this is the day I have to go to Los Angeles. Good old L.A., where they wake up in the morning to the sound of birds coughing.
Yes, friends, this is the day that the powers to be asked Susie to appear on The Mating Game, an incredibly popular TV show designed to impress those with the mentality of a wombat.
If I get rid of this headache, it should be fun. I've got a chance to meet some really groovy guys.
From what I've heard about the show, you have a better chance in San Luis Obispo, but I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
Susie flies to L.A. for an interview and finds herself placed immediately on The Mating Game. Our heroine is isolated offstage in a soundproof booth with a pair of headphones so she can hear everything that's going on.
I'm Jim Klang. Welcome to The Mating Game, where eligible bachelors come to compete for the date of their life with the girl of their dreams. Let's meet our first contestants right now. Our first bachelor plays varsity rugby. He's a senior in business management at Caltech. Comes originally from Poondale, in California, I think. He plans eventually to become president of Runs Quick Bowling Corporation. Not a modest goal, but then there's nothing modest about it, right? Don't answer that. His hobbies include a fast game of tag around his apartment on Sunday afternoons. The only time he's sober. Just kidding, kid. It's in the script. Rock Newtony. Number two is a student. He's a philosophy major at Immaculate Heart College. Digs reading McEwen, Tolstoy, and Lyndon Johnson. Listens to contemporary classics. His favorite group is the Archies. His goal in life is to climb that mountain, whatever that means. Peace, baby. Say welcome to Norman Lincoln. Our third bachelor, perhaps some of you recognize him from his popular drive time show on our local radio station, says he's like slow gin and fast chicks, and I need a mouth job. He's a man of my own style. He did graduate work with Radio Free Europe. Really digs sailing, and his idea of a groovy time is cooking for his date in his Manhattan Beach apartment. A big hi for Rod Rogers. Well, there they are, for what it's worth. To keep our young lady from hearing anything about these gentlemen, we've kept her isolated offstage in a specially constructed booth. Actually, it's a refrigerator carton with holes punched in it so she can breathe. Let's bring her out right now. She's a girl of many talents, a fine actress with a command of many roles. She works right now as a secretary, but has plans for more exciting careers later on. Perhaps one working with children. She digs skiing. Says it gives her a sense of freedom. Let's meet her now. Her name is Susie Swiss Cheese. Well, Susie, you look cool and collected. Got your questions ready? Okay, just sit right there. All right, bachelors, say hello to Susie. Number one?
Hello to Susie.
Number two?
Peace, Susie.
And number three?
I think I love you, Susie.
Very good, men. Susie, they're all yours.
Number one, if you win and take me out, Will you kiss me on the first time?
The first time what?
Number two, same question.
Oh, far out. I mean, wow, but kissing spreads germs.
Thank you. Number three, do you like to cook for your dates?
No, actually, I like my dates to cook for me.
Oh, really? Seriously, now, what would you cook for me, number three?
Well, it depends on a number of things. I think at first I would probably fix something with universal appeal, such as me, or maybe fondue.
I hope you weren't going to make a reference to Swiss cheese. Well, number two, what's your idea of a far-out Sunday afternoon?
Oh, wow, lying in the grass, just lying there looking at the sky and the birds and the trees and grooving on old Mother Nature.
Sounds nice. Number one, same question.
Watching number two get picked up for lying about his grass.
You should be on radio. What's your favorite car, number one?
Oh, one that runs and has a back seat.
Number three, same question.
My favorite car? Probably a...
Hold it, number three. These prepared questions and answers are ridiculous. Tell me, number one, what do you really think about...
I'm sorry, Susie. That's all the time we have. Susie, on the basis of their answers, you must decide. Will you choose bachelor number one, bachelor number two, or bachelor number three? And while you're deciding, we'll take a look at some of our mating gang couples as they were photographed having the time of their lives at the first annual San Francisco Bird Cleaning Festival. All right, Susie, it's time for your decision.
Gosh, I just don't know. They're all such duds. How about a date with you?
I'm sorry, Susie. I belong to the station. Which bachelor will it be?
Oh, nuts. Number three, I guess.
Any particular reason for choosing number three?
No, but might as well pick a high number, though.
Okay, Susie. First, let's meet the gentleman you did not select. Number one is a sports-minded business student with, obviously, a fine sense of humor. Susie... Meet Rock Newtney.
Hey, can I change my mind? Wow, oh well, forget it.
Number two is a heavy thinker, an intellectual with a love of the outdoors. That's usually where he sleeps anyway. His name is Norman Lincoln.
Peace, Norman. Gosh, you've got nice hair. Longer than mine, of course, but...
And now, Susie, here's the moment you've been waiting for. But first, let me tell you something about your date. He's a mod, arrogant type, as you probably could tell. What you probably don't know is that he's one of L.A.'s favorite rock jocks. In fact, he's number one in Southern California between 3 a.m. and 3:05. He likes fine cars, fine wines, and fine food. He's a master of the culinary arts. He also owns his own boat and an apartment ideally suited to a man of his taste. Let's give a warm round of applause for Rod Rogers.
Oh, my sweet lord, what a hit!
Strike three.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden.
Rod and Susie, the mating game has an exciting time planned for you. You and your mating game chaperones will fly to Pismo Beach, California for the annual Clam Digging Festival.
I knew it! I knew it!
Backstage at last, Susie finds that, unfortunately, Rod can go to Pismo with her.
Ought to be a really wild time, Susie. I hope you can dig clams. After all, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with.
Will Susie really go to Pismo with Rod Rogers? Will Rod reveal the secret buried deep in his past? Will our writers come up with some decent questions?
The answer, of course, is no. But tune in again sometime, somewhere, for the continuing adventures of Susie Swiss Cheese.
Available in ointment or suppository form.
Have you done your Christmas shopping, Dottie? I warn you that I have too much to do this year to help you wrap things.
I shall not ask you to wrap things, Mother, and I don't care to serve on a committee this year, Mother, and please do not call me Dottie.
I thought you might be chairman of the hospital committee.
I don't care to be on a committee, Mother.
But why, Dottie? Dorothea?
I just don't.
Did you hear that, Edward? Dorothea refuses to help with the distribution of gifts on Christmas Eve. Just let me tell you, young lady, you are not going to the dance. I do not, as you know, approve of public dances, and I especially disapprove of dances on Christmas Eve. Lon Grimes is a nice boy, but you're not going to the dance.
This is not a public dance, Mother, if you care to be exact, and I haven't the least desire to go.
If you're not going to the dance, dear, you might as well go to the church. You can ask Lon to come, and I was keeping a little surprise for you, and I suppose I might as well tell you now. I've been planning a New Year's party for you, a dance. We'll send the invitations the day after Christmas. So you see, dear, I have a very special reason for wanting you to get your Christmas cards and greetings done early.
I'm not sending gifts and greetings this year, Mother, and I really don't care about a party. Parties are such a waste of time.
Why, may I ask why, Dorothea, Vanessa Stanton, you are not sending your friends gifts and greetings?
I consider it an empty gesture, and I hate insincerity.
But what will your friends think?
That is of little moment. Emerson says, conformity is the hobgoblin of little minds.
Are you sure that's correctly quoted?
Well, it means the same. If you don't mind, I'll retire to my room. One can't get much from Keats unless one is alone.
Did you ever hear anything so ridiculous? It sounds as if she has a crush on her English teacher. One of those gushy little things with an M.A., I suppose, or an old maid trying to be glamorous.
If it will make you feel any better. He happens to be a 6-foot male, he has an M.A., and possibly he is glamorous.
Edward, you must do something.
Neil's all right. He plays a good game of golf.
Couldn't you suggest to him?
What? That he shouldn't teach Keats or Emerson?
Of course not. I mean that...
Let Dorothea alone. Everything will work out, I think.
But think of all the suffering she's preparing for herself. The loss of friends, of popularity.
If it takes gifts and greeting cards to keep her friends, she's better off without them. Christmas has become commercialized until...
Edward, if that isn't just like you, encouraging the child in her...
revolt against the commercializing of one of our most sacred holidays? I'm glad the younger generation...
I'm not going to listen to one of your lectures, Edward. I must go and powder my nose. I don't want to be late for our last committee meeting. We have to decide, finally, what families need boxes and what... You answer it. I'm going upstairs. If it's anyone for me, I'm not in.
Come on in, Gwen. Yeah, she's here. I'll call her. She's in her room.
Was she planning anything for this evening?
Planning to read Keats, I guess.
Dorothea! Dorothea! Gwendolyn is here.
Gwen, why don't you sit down? Oh, where's that paper? Oh, here it is. Pretty busy these days, Gwen? Getting ready for Christmas and all that?
Oh, yes, I have been. Just rushing around to get my Christmas shopping done early. And now nothing to do but just wait for Christmas. It's an awful bore.
I've kind of always enjoyed that last-minute Christmas shopping myself.
Oh, hello, Gwen.
Hello, Thea. Want to go to a movie tonight?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Oh, come on. You can wrap Christmas packages tomorrow.
It isn't that.
If it's something I can help you with, addressing Christmas cards?
I'm not sending gifts or greetings this year.
What? Why, how funny?
Well, it's an empty gesture. It's not sincere to send gifts unless one absolutely wishes to send them.
Oh, I see. You're sending only to your real friends. That's a good idea. I think I'll run over my list and...
That's not what I meant. I just don't intend to send any gifts or greetings. I consider it an empty gesture.
Thea, if I didn't know you as well as I do, I wouldn't know what to think. Are you going to the dance Christmas Eve?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. No wonder you're peeved. But I suppose you're chairman of a committee and your picture will be in the papers. Though I don't see why you can't come to the dance afterwards.
I'm not acting on a committee. I'm going to stay home and read Keats.
Read Keats on Christmas Eve?
Well, what's the matter with Keats?
Nothing's the matter with Keats. I think he was human enough to wish to celebrate Christmas with his friends.
Oh, do you think so?
Yes, I do. He says, O solitude, if I must with thee dwell, let it be not in some murky building, but on nature's heights, or something like that.
Why, Dad, I didn't suppose you knew Keats.
Well, he's been required reading for a good many years.
Thea, you won't mind if I go to the dance with Lon?
Oh, certainly not.
You sure you won't want to go to a movie?
Yes, I'm sure.
Here, would you like this?
No, keep your chair, Eddie. I never did like those big overgrown chairs. I like a chair you can sit up in.
Here, Grandma, you can have my chair.
No, Daddy, it's too soft. When I sit up. If I'm not able to sit up, I go to bed.
Good evening, Mrs. Stanton.
Good evening, young lady. My sight isn't as good as it used to be, but you're a nice, well-mannered young lady. You give me my name like a civilized person. I'm not grandma of the whole community, though. You'd think so to hear Dottie's friends.
I wish you wouldn't call me Dottie. I hate it just as much as you hate to be called grandma.
Do you now? I'll try to remember to call you Dorothea. I just don't understand why you didn't tell me before. I like people to be sincere.
Well, so do I, Grandma.
Well, I guess I'll go and see if Melissa wants to go to the show. Say, Thea, what are you going to do with all the presents you get from other people?
Oh, I'll probably send them back with a polite little note explaining my position.
When did you get a position?
I mean my position in regard to Christmas gifts and greetings. I'm not sending any this year. I think it's an empty gesture.
Well, for goodness sake.
Exactly. The true spirit of Christmas has been commercialized. Its sincerity has been ruined by business, just as many other excellent and beautiful ideas have been ruined. Take Mother's Day, for example, or take Father's
Day. Take a dose of castor oil, if that's the way you feel, Edward Stanton. I don't know what the world's coming to. No Christmas gifts.
You don't think you'll change your mind about the dance, Thea?
No, I won't change my mind.
Oh, I just thought maybe, well, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Blessed is he who, posing as a martyr, does not find himself a fool.
What are you talking about, Dad? I'll answer it. Hello, Lon. Come in.
Good evening, Lon.
Good evening, Mr. Stanton.
I guess I'll have to go down to the corner store for a cigar.
You're awfully busy, I know, Thea, with Christmas so near. But you might give a fellow a chance.
I'm not busy, Lon, and I don't understand your remark.
Honestly, Thea, you're getting harder to understand than a teacher. What's the matter?
I'm growing up, Lon. That's all. I'm beginning to understand life.
Oh, but see here, Thea. Even adults attend dances. Why don't you come to the Christmas Eve hop? It'll be just our crowd.
That's just it.
Oh, I see. If Prof. Neal were to be there, you'd be begging me to take you. It's just too sickening the way you girls sit up front and crane your necks and make eyes big for that bozo. Every time I go to class, I want to sock him.
Professor Neal is a gentleman.
Well, I feel sorry for him, the way you girls act.
Really, Lon, you don't seem to know what you're talking about. First you want to sock him, and then you feel sorry for him. I won't keep you home from the Christmas Eve dance. Why don't you go with Gwen?
Go with Gwen? Are you crazy?
I've decided to live my own life, Lon, without regard to opinions of others. Without...
Without me, I suppose you mean. All right. I'll find my own girl. You don't need to go shoving me off on Gwen.
Now, Lon, don't carry on like that. I'm not shoving you off on anybody. Just because I've resolved to live my own life...
Oh, no, get out of my way. Oh, it's you, Professor Neal. A gentleman to see you, Miss Stanton.
What's the matter with our young friend? He seems excited.
He's in a hurry to go skating, I guess. Well, won't you sit down, please?
I just stopped in to see if your father would want a game of golf in the morning. It's hard to find anyone who's not too busy so near Christmas.
Father just stepped down to the corner store to buy a cigar. I've been reading Keats this evening.
What? So near Christmas? You must be one of those four-handed persons who have every card and package ready days before Christmas. And then it's an awful strain, isn't it, waiting for Christmas? This year I did my Christmas shopping early, but never again. I don't know what to do with myself until Christmas Eve.
Why, I never supposed you'd feel like that.
No? Thought I was too old, huh? Of course, I have another reason for being excited about Christmas this year. You see, I didn't go home because the girl I'm engaged to marry is coming here. She lives here. Know her?
It's Miss Linden. You know, I've admired her since I was a little girl. She's wonderful.
That's what I think.
That bell's been ringing all evening.
Maybe it's Santa Claus this time.
Why, hello, children. Come right in where it's warm. You're wrong. It's someone looking for Santa Claus.
Well, they've come to the right place. I'm Santa.
Where's your whiskers?
Oh, I took them off because it's so warm in the house. But I'll have to wear them when I go out with my reindeer.
Where are your reindeer now?
Grazing up at the North Pole. They like the moss up there. It makes them so strong that they can go as fast as the fastest airplane.
Just like Popeye eating spinach?
Mama said you wouldn't come to our house. Why?
I guess my elves must have overlooked you. Once in a while, they miss somebody. Where do you live?
Just back of this house.
We're not going to have our Christmas until the day after Christmas because we can't afford a tree.
Mama said we could ask someone to give us a tree after they were through with it.
You darlings, you came here to ask for your Christmas tree.
Yes, ma'am. If you don't want to, we'll go somewhere else, but your house was so light and we thought...
We thought you'd have a nice tree.
Bless your hearts. You're going to have a tree of your own, and you'll have it tomorrow night, too.
I'll see to it personally. What are your names? I must get this for the record, you know.
Lane. I'm Jimmy Lane, and she's Joan.
And you live just back of the Stantons?
It's a small house, and we don't have a very bright light.
At least not in front. We have to have the light in the kitchen while Mom irons.
Why doesn't she iron in the daytime?
She washes in the daytime.
What does your father do?
He's sick. He just got back from the hospital.
I think I'd better go home with the children and see just how things are.
May I come too?
I think you'd better leave it to Santa Claus. But I'll let you in on the good work. Come, children. You'll have to show Santa where you live.
Hello, Mrs. Grimes? Is Lon there? Oh, hi, Lon. Lon, I'm not crying. Professor Neal has just been here and... Why, Lon Grimes, he is not. He's engaged to Miss Linden. And, well, what difference does it make? Oh, Lon, I've been such a fool. Why, even Professor Neal sends Christmas gifts. I wonder what everybody will think of me. Why, that's right. There's all day tomorrow. Why, maybe I can. I'll try to coax Mother to let me go. All right, call me later. Goodbye. Hello? Is Gwen there? Oh, she is. I thought she'd have gone to a show. Hello, Gwen. Didn't you go to a show? Oh, that's too bad. No, I'm kind of glad I stayed home. I wouldn't have missed this evening for anything. Who do you think was here? Professor Neal. Did you know he was engaged to Miss Linden? Say, Gwen, guess what? I've decided to send greeting cards and gifts after all. Yeah, I'll say I'll be busy tomorrow. I have to play Santa Claus, too. The Lanes. You know, he's been in the Veterans Hospital. Oh, Melissa's there? They're going caroling tonight? No, I don't know about the dance. I might go. Of course I'll go with Lon. Well, goodbye. Oh, Daddy, I'm so happy.
Hey, what's happened here? This isn't the dignified young lady I left reading Keats.
Professor Neal was here.
Oh?
And, Dad, I've decided to give Christmas presents after all.
Indeed?
Did you know that Professor Neal was engaged to Miss Linden?
I had heard it.
There's Mother. Oh, Mumsy, I'm so happy.
Dear me, Dottie, don't be so impetuous. I hate to be jumped at. What's happened?
Santa Claus has been here.
Really, Dottie, it's always one extreme or the other.
Mother, do you know the Lanes? They live in the street back of us.
Of course. We decided tonight to send them a Christmas basket.
You won't need to, Mother. Professor Neal was here, and he went over to talk with Mr. Lane. I'm going to buy the girl a doll. Dad, may I have some extra money? Let me draw my next month's allowance. There's so many things I want to get.
What was Professor Neal doing here?
Well, he came to ask if Dad wanted to play golf in the morning. But after the Lane children came, he said he wouldn't have time for golf. He'd be too busy shopping.
How would you like to go shopping with your dear old Dad tomorrow morning, Dot?
Oh, Dad, how lovely!
Edward, if you two go Christmas shopping, there won't be enough in the bank to pay December bills.
Oh, don't worry, Catherine. We're still a long way from the poorhouse.
Who's going to the poorhouse?
Listen, Grandma. Santa Claus is coming after all. Daddy's going shopping with me in the morning, and Professor Neal and I are going to play Santa Claus to the Lanes.
Dorothea, will you try to control your exuberance and not act as if you belong in a psychiatric ward? As to playing Santa Claus to the Lanes, that's absurd. The board discussed the Lanes case this evening, and the necessary things will be done.
But we're going to do the unnecessary things. It's the unnecessary things that are important at Christmas.
It's the unnecessary things that are important most of the time.
Now, Mother, if you and Edward are going to support the child in her foolish notions, don't blame me for the result. Dorothea, haven't you better read Emerson some more? It seems to me he said something about the golden mean.
Oh, Dad, I just thought of that quotation. I did have it wrong. It's, consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds.
And what difference does that make?
Well, that means only little people are afraid to change their minds.
That's right. That's very true, no matter who said it.
Better close the door, Dottie. You're cooling off the room too much for Grandma.
Not for me, Catherine. I don't dress in cheesecloth. I can stand the draft.
Mother, may I call them in? Why should you?
Why shouldn't she? Must entertaining be standardized as well as charity?
But I haven't anything to serve.
I put some bottles of ginger ale in the icebox this morning, and there's a carton of cookies in the hall closet. It's Mother's Christmas gift, but I'll get another one.
No, you won't. I don't know any better way to use it.
Hi, come on in. We want you to come in.
It's warm in here. We thought you might like to come in and get warm.
It's not cold out.
Come out to the kitchen and help me put these on plates, Gwen. And Lon, you can come and open bottles.
Well, Neil, I hear you've been playing Santa Claus. Going to cheat me out of some golf game tomorrow?
I'm sorry, Mr. Stanton, if you were counting on it.
It's all right. I'm going Christmas shopping myself anyway.
It's Dad's treat.
Well, we ought to be able to sing better after this. You're coming with us, Dorothea. We missed you.
Mr. Neal almost missed the caroling himself. He just joined us at the corner.
I was playing Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah? I bet it was a date.
He was playing Santa Claus. I was there. I mean, I was here.
Hey, let's go. If we stop like this every day...
We won't get home till morning.
Well, good night, then.
Good night.
Yeah. Good night. Merry Christmas.
Coming, Phil. Just a minute. I get you. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Mrs. Stanton, will you let Dorothea go to the dance? Of course, if she goes to the church first.
I suppose. According to Emerson, I'm small-minded if I can't change my mind.
Oh, Mumsy, thanks. Merry Christmas. Night, Granny. Remember our date, Dad.
Girls are such a responsibility.
If people would quit worrying about their children and worry a little bit more about themselves, the children might be better off.
Why, that's rather modern, you know, Mother.
Even ideas come back in style if you keep them long enough.
You've been listening to An Empty Gesture, KCPR Holiday Play Productions presentation for Christmas. The play was written by Mary Graham Lund, was directed by Russ Lash and Lou Sturm. The cast of characters was as follows: Mrs. Stanton was played by Ginny DeBoer. Dorothy by Joni Fuentes. Mr. Stanton by Gary Gardner. Gwendolyn by Cheryl Quartermont. Grandma Stanton by Craig Hines. Lon Grimes by Ed O'Brien. Professor Neal by Bernie Wright. Jimmy Lane by Lou Rinaldi. And Joan Lane by Claudia Galloway. Assisting in the production was Gary Sturgeon. Producers were Russ Lash and Lou Sturm. KCPR Holiday Play Productions is a division of Special Productions of Radio 91. This program has been pre-recorded. This is Harold Halakainen speaking for the staff and management of KCPR and wishing you a joyous holiday season.
Christmas is coming, how joyful it will be. The family will gather around the Christmas tree.
With silver tinsel shiny bright, the room is all aglow.
There's a kiss for you and me beneath the mistletoe.
Christmas is coming, how joyful it will be. The family will gather around the Christmas tree. With silver tinsel shiny bright, the room is all aglow. There's a kiss for you and me beneath the mistletoe. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Good tidings we bring to you and your kin.
Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Good tidings to you wherever you are.
Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Now bring us some figgy pudding.
Now bring us some figgy pudding.
Now bring us some figgy pudding and bring it out here.
Good tidings to you.
Wish to you and all of yours a merry, merry Christmas and a happy, happy new year. Merry, merry Christmas and a happy, happy new year. Noel, Noel, Noel. We wish you a merry Christmas. We wish you a merry Christmas. We wish you a merry Christmas.
well, welcome back. This is KCPR San Luis Obispo, returning to the air for our fourth season of broadcasting.
KCPR operates at 91.3 megahertz with 10 watts of power under the authority of the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C.
KCPR is licensed to California State Polytechnic College, San Luis Obispo.
And Dr. Robert E. Kennedy is executor of the license.
Now that we're officially here.
Back on the air again, as they say.
To go. It's really nice to be back. Hello, San Luis. It's really nice to see you again.
See him again. Well, this thing has, this is radio. It's not too...
Well, nice to hear. Have you hear us again.
Right. Let's introduce ourselves before we go any farther.
Okay, you go first. You're higher up.
My name is Woody Goulart, and I'm the general manager this season here.
And I'm Steve Stegner. I'm program director, and if there's anything wrong, it's our fault.
Right, especially with this opening program. We have the Motown story on tap at 12:15, which is coming up in a few minutes. But before that, we have some special previews and a surprise for you.
We want to explain to you what's going to be happening, what you'll be listening to for the next 9, 10, 11, who knows how many months.
For however long you're here.
Yeah, and we have special programs, some very new programs, and among them, the San Luis Obispo story.
Prominent San Luis Obispo citizens speak out on their city, Art Hapgood.
During the service, I was on the East Coast and in the South, and I felt at that point that anybody who had the opportunity to live in the Central Coast area of California and didn't must have rocks in his head.
Danny Clarkson.
It's a little more enjoyable to do your daily tasks, you know, under that sort of a atmosphere as opposed to just grinding it out in Los Angeles where there isn't much humanity left.
Fred Peterson.
You can walk down the streets any hour of the day or night in safety. I have just completed a two-week vacation in a Midwestern city from where I come in Ohio, where it is not safe to walk on the streets at night. You take your life in your hands. It's not safe to go to a grocery store or to go to a bar or any place else because you may not make it home.
Homer Odom.
There's a good feel for things that are rural, the rural life, much, much closer to nature here in San Luis Obispo than in any of the urban centers. It's not possible to do that in any of the large cities. Even if you can get away frequently, you still don't have that pure sense of joy at looking up and seeing the green hills surrounding San Luis Obispo.
Bob Corcoran.
Great local girl, pioneer family here. Raised my family here, and I just love it here in San Luis Obispo.
Join Radio 91 for the San Luis Obispo story presented Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8:25 in the morning, 1:25 in the afternoon, and 7:25 at night. That's the San Luis Obispo story premiering tomorrow on Radio 91.
We'd like to add that starting tomorrow, the San Luis Obispo story presents a special introductory chapter. And Wednesday, we present the Fred Peterson chapter of the San Luis Obispo story. And on Friday, Mayor Kenneth Schwartz will be presented in his chapter.
And of the first three of many more.
Right, they'll be presented every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the times that we said, so you'll be listening to that all quarter long and then some.
Right, and we have not only the San Luis Obispo story brand new to Music San Luis Obispo, but we have a testing show. don't snicker at me, Elwood. The testing show invites you to match wits with us and to win prizes for doing so. And if everything works right, we have an explanation of what kind of things will be happening every Tuesday and Thursday evening right here on KCPR.
KCPR issues a challenge and invites you to match wits with Music San Luis Obispo. When we ask the question, you provide the answer and rip us off for records, movie passes, and gobs of other goodies. The program is Testing 1-2-3 and happens every Tuesday and Thursday evening at 7:30. So bone up, mental midgets, and become winners here on the new 91.
I can't wait for that one myself, can you?
I can because I may have to do it, and...
It ought to be quite interesting. That's a special preview of that testing 1-2-3 tonight at 8:30.
And it will happen every Tuesday and Thursday, starting this Tuesday and next Thursday from now until the end of our reign.
Right. And our phone number is, of course, 546-2289. Don't call it now, but tonight...
As soon as you get a chance, at 8:30 this evening.
There it is, ringing already.
And yeah, people just love the Given Records. Those are the two fun things that are going to be happening here, amongst many more. We also have some things that may mean something to you happening here on KCPR, and we have a special program, don't we?
Right. It's Monday night at 6 o'clock. It's called Talk to an Addict, produced by KVEC Radio in San Luis, and we're going to be simulcasting that on Monday nights. Starting this Monday, hopefully it'll turn into a series. We don't know yet, but...
A very good series. Some of the things that'll be happening are explained now by KVEC News Director Vic Bremer.
This is Vic Bremer, KVEC News. Monday night at 6 p.m., join KCPR for a special program, Talk to an Addict. No matter what your age or position, child, young or old, your life could be touched by drug abuse. Call and talk to a 28-year-old woman who mainlined for 10 years. Monday night at 6 p.m., the phone lines will be open for on-the-air conversation. You'll be able to call 543-8830 or 544-1030. Hear it on KVEC or KCPR. Monday night at 6, Talk to an Addict.
And we hope it turns into something very educational and interesting. It's Vic Bremer and Talk to an Addict on KVEC and KCPR. That's happening tomorrow night. But do we have things happening tonight?
We have things happening. We have Sunday by requests immediately following testing 1-2-3, and that'll be at 9 o'clock, where you can call in and request the songs you'd like to hear most.
And immediately preceding testing 1-2-3, am I right, is Mission City Memories.
Right after the Motown story, we have a few hours of old popular hits that everybody loves to hear again and again.
And not even that old, things that have happened the last summer and so forth. So something well worth listening to. And you'll enjoy the first day, or first half a day anyway, of broadcasting.
What about those people that like to come down and take part actively in the studio?
If you'd like to someday do this...
That's a hint. Do it.
We have something to inform you.
Psst. Hey, kid, you want to be in radio?
What have I got news for you? The KCPR General Staff is having their first General Staff meeting Tuesday night, September 28th, at 6 p.m. in Graphic Arts Room 303. All persons who are interested in radio are urged to attend. There's no obligation, but don't tell anybody because the meeting's open to the general public. Right. Well, anyway, that's the KCPR General Staff meeting Tuesday night, September 28th, at 6 p.m. in Graphic Arts Room 303. Are you serious about this?
That guy's nuts.
He sure comes on strong, doesn't he?
Yes.
Well, we've shown you a few of the good sides of KCPR. I think we'll take a few minutes now and show you one of the worst.
It's not the worst side. No. We want to explain. We do things here. Sometimes we have to do it five times before we get it right to be broadcast for you to hear. So this time we're going to do like all the TV shows do and show things that they never could show on TV. Well, we don't have TV, so we're going to do it on the radio, which you never could hear before. This is called KCPR on Cue, and all of us at the best of our best.
Are you going to tape this?
Oh, eventually, yeah.
Oh, okay. Sam, I'm so excited about being here today. Jeez!
That's enough, faggot.
Those lenses are only about... What's it look like? It's a long thing about like that?
1-2-3-4.
Testing 1-2-3. Where's the script? I need the script. Who's got the script?
That fan.
What's the matter? Oh. You ready for testing one?
Okay, I gotta say first, as part of the fourth season of KCPR, no.
No. I had it once. Testing 1-2-3
first of all,
becomes part of KCPR San Luis Obispo's fourth season of broadcast.
Test 1-2. All right. Frank, are you ready?
I see.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Are you there?
Okay, now if you're going to be talking when this is on, this is going to record. So what you say? As part of the fourth, testing 1-2-3 becomes part of the fourth season of KCPR San Luis Obispo.
I don't know what they have, but I'll check up there.
Yeah, testing 1-2-3 becomes part of KCPR San Luis Obispo's fourth season of broadcasting.
And then you'll just go into it.
But you got it. But let the music play so that you, when you finish, it goes into the other bed. So you let the music play for, in fact...
Okay.
Guess $166. What are you doing?
Butt off. Sweetie. Oh, I love you. Okay, this is a take. The good one. That's what we said last time, huh?
Are you sure?
Testing 1, 2, 3 becomes part of the fourth season of broadcasting of KCPR San Luis Obispo.
You'll screw it up, you silly savage. What we could do,
that line.
What we could do with my looks and your brains.
Did you ever go to the North Beach? So we went to the Garden of Eden.
Simple request.
All right, one more time. Right. Right on the set. I guess we don't need to turn that key on.
Testing 1, 2, 3 becomes part of the fourth season of broadcast.
You guys could screw up a chocolate cake.
He worked for the Oakland Tribune.
Are you ready? Frank, you son of a...
Be on the lookout for it.
You blab in the middle of the song. Let's see.
Well, is it recording?
Yeah.
It should be, is it?
Oh, gosh, why don't you do anything?
That's terrible. Now be quiet.
Hey, the meter's overloading here.
Well, turn your monitor down.
No, I mean the VU meter. It's pinning +4.
Well,
what's my level on number one?
Up here.
You have the music and the talking on the phone all together.
All right.
We have everything here. You have just the final.
This is the one that counts, but you don't give a what the meter reads?
Just so it's
what, are you crazy? What's going on?
Just so it's okay on the Ampex.
Oh, okay. Put some music on.
Testing 1, 2, 3 becomes part of KCPR...
Hold it. The level isn't up high enough.
Is this student college radio?
It's on!
Okay, what is going to interview you? I bet you can't say, okay, what did Tiny Tim tiptoe through?
The band's
Then at the end, then don't say anything at the end, because I'm going to say, testing 1, 2, 3, premiering Sunday, September 26th at 8:30. I'll forget
that, too. But anyway, are you ready? Okay.
Testing 1, 2, 3 becomes part of KCPR San Luis Obispo's fourth season of broadcasting.
Are you ready for testing one?
Oh, yeah, I'm so excited. Oh, gee.
Okay, what did Tiny Tim tip-throw to through?
His mouth, idiot. He walked all over it.
One more time. Are you ready?
Oh, God, what a joke. Hey, this is even funnier than the script. Let's put this on.
Testing 1, 2, 3 becomes part of KCPR San Luis Obispo's fourth season of broadcasting.
Are you ready for testing one?
Oh, jeez, I'm so excited. I don't know what to do.
Okay, what did Tiny Tim tiptoe through?
The pansies.
Oh, you're wrong.
Oh, I wasn't supposed to give the answer?
Testing 1, 2, 3 becomes part of KCPR San Luis Obispo's fourth season of broadcasting.
Are you ready for testing one?
Oh, jeez, I'm so excited.
Okay, what did Tiny Tim tiptoe through?
Tiny Tim always got such small feet. Pansies! That's it, pansies!
No, you're all wrong.
Well, if that's the way you're going to be about it, goodbye.
That's just one example of Testing 1, 2, 3, premiering Sunday, September 26th at 8:30.
That's just one example of Testing 1, 2, 3, and that was KCPR on cue, where we do things that we don't ordinarily play on the radio, but we did it for you that time, and that's the last time, maybe. Stand by next for the Motown story, following immediately right here on Radio 91.
Tonight, KCPR, in keeping with the Halloween spirit, brings you the mad genius of Edgar Allan Poe in presenting his ghastly masterpiece, The Fall of the House of Usher. Never was there an author who aroused such a storm of controversy as Poe. In Europe, he was hailed as a genius. In his own land, critics never have been able to agree, and the quarrel over Poe still rages. Listen to what critics say about him.
His talent was extraordinary, but he did not give the world one single inspiring thought.
His is the most distinctive art the New World has produced.
Distinctive, perhaps, but it was the product of a sickly body and a diseased imagination.
Poe never discovered the difference between the real world and the world of fantasy.
He fled to dreams to escape from the wretchedness of his life.
Brilliant!
Morbid!
Weird! Wonderful!
What manner of a man was this slender, pallid being with his high, full forehead and flashing gray eyes? Was he painting a self-portrait when he created the unnaturally sensitive, melancholy Roderick Usher in his masterpiece, The Fall of the House of Usher? The House of Usher, among dank sedges and decaying white tree stems, with the dark, lurid waters of a tarn or lake lipping its gray walls.
So this is my welcome to the House of Usher, a bird of ill omen. What a desolate spot. No wonder my old schoolmate begs for cheerful society. What ho, the house. A visitor to the House of Usher.
I'll let down the drawbridge, sir.
A moment, sir. This door is seldom opened.
I'm Norman Legrand, an old friend of your master.
Welcome to the House of Usher.
Plague that bird. I should think your master would have had it killed.
Oh, no, sir. There have always been vultures here. I'll send a boy for your horse, sir.
Roderick Usher is expecting me, I suppose.
Oh, yes. He heard you coming 2 and more hours ago. This way, please, sir.
You said he heard me coming 2 hours ago? I don't understand.
Good day, young sir. I'm delighted to see you have come. You will be a comfort to Mr. Usher. He'll soon need comfort, I fear. Well, good day, sir. Good day.
Who was that fellow who just passed us on the stairs?
The physician, sir. Down this passage, if you please.
Physician? Is Roderick sick?
No, it is his sister, the Lady Madeline. She won't be on earth much longer, but it's taken her 10 long years to die. Mr. Usher, your friend has arrived.
Come in.
Norman Legrand, forgive me for not being at the door of my house to welcome you.
Is it really you, Roderick? I would hardly know you.
I do not make a habit of looking into mirrors much, yet I know that I have changed. These pallid cheeks, this hollowed forehead, these lacklustered eyes.
Oh, nonsense, old boy.
It was good of you to come to try to help me. I thought perhaps a human hand. A warm, living hand in this house of shadows.
Your valet just told me of your sister's illness. I'm so sorry to hear of it.
There she is now, passing through the far end of the apartment.
Good heavens! What was it the fellow said? She's been 10 years dying. She looks as though she's been 10 years dead.
My last relative on earth. My one companion.
But she's able to be about. The doctors may be wrong.
No, no. She has steadily refused to give way to the mistress malady that has wasted her to what you just saw. But at any moment now, I expect to hear she is gone. Did you hear me singing when you came? I was composing her dirge.
Oh, come now, old friend. Why, what a conversation we've gotten into. Death and dirges and all that sort of thing. Let's have a livelier air.
No, no, I can't bear it.
What can't you bear?
I have a strange affliction, a nervous disorder hereditary to my house. It has made my senses morbidly acute. I can eat only the most insipid food, bear only garments of certain texture against my skin. The smell of flowers makes me swoon. Most of all, I am sensitive to sounds. Yes, I am haunted by sounds no one else seems able to hear. Listen, do you hear that? That faint rustle?
I hear nothing except your infernal vultures over the tarn.
I hear the worms, my friend.
Worms?
Far down in the earth, the worms are stirring, gnawing.
Oh, I say, you can't hear worms.
And that's not all I hear. I hear the stones decaying in the walls. I hear my sister's heavy breathing in her room.
This is folly, Roderick. You must throw off such thoughts.
Folly? But I shall perish of this folly one day. I am terrified of terror. There is a doom of this house of Usher, Norman. That's what I'm listening for. The approach of doom.
It's the atmosphere of this place. I felt it myself when I first saw it, and heavens knows I'm just an ordinary man, and not at all sensitive. You should leave this house, Roderick. Come with me into the everyday world. What does that bell mean, Roderick?
It means that Lady Madeline is dead. Madeline was afraid of open places in the night. She has lived so long inside of these gray walls. She would not have rested easy in her graves. I would have heard her turning in her grave.
Surely this isn't your real reason, Roderick.
No, there is another reason. But I cannot tell you what it is. It is much too terrible.
Well, after all, this vault is no worse than the rooms above. Living in this house is like being buried alive.
Buried alive?
Let's get out of here. I'm chilled through. We'll have a fire in your apartment. Let's go up and talk of pleasant things.
I was wrong to send for you, old friend. You have no place in this house. Go while you can. As for me, it's too late.
I can't leave you now. I'll stay. Come, Roderick. The candle burns blue in this fetid air.
Farewell, Madeline.
Farewell, sister.
And now a change came over the ravaged countenance of the master of the house. The pallor of his cheeks grew still more ghastly. He could not remain still, but paced up and down. More than once he seemed struggling to divulge some fearful secret. Then there came a night of storm that rocked the ancient house of Usher.
As well give up the effort. That wind sounds like voices. I'll shut the windows. If I stayed here much longer, I'd be as near the verge of madness as Roderick Usher. Oh, my poor old schoolfellow. I'm afraid he's lost.
Norman?
Roderick! So you can't sleep either, my dear fellow. Come in and we'll keep each other company.
So you haven't seen our illumination. Put out your candle. The light of my house is brighter. I'll open the shutters. The glow you see comes from no moon or stars. It is the light of the tomb.
Shut that window. Come away from that window. Those spectral lights have perfectly natural origins. They're phosphorescence from the stagnant waters of the tarn. Sit down. Let's talk quietly as we did long ago at school.
Long ago? I can't remember. How can I think of anything when my sister is dead?
You saw her placed in her coffin a year ago? Why do you look at me like that?
The Lady Madeline died a week ago, Roderick.
A year, a week, it is all the same. I am the last of the race.
Not if you rouse yourself. Leave this house.
No, I must perish. Do you know what I shall die of? I'll tell you. Fear. Nothing but fear.
Here's one of your favorite books, The Mad Treatise by Sir Lancelot Canning. Listen, I'll read to you, and you should listen. It'll help pass this dreadful night. And as Ethelred waited no longer to hold parley with the hermit, but uplifted his face with the blows quickly, made room in the planking of the door for his gauntleted hand, and the noise of the cracking and ripping of the wood reverberated through the forest.
Do you hear that, Norman? The ripping of the wood? The iron scream of the hinges of the vault? I know what she's doing.
It's nothing, I tell you. Nothing!
Madeline will be here soon. She's coming to upbraid me for putting her in her tomb so hurriedly. Don't you hear her footsteps on the stairs?
No, no. There's an explanation of this.
Listen. Can't you hear the heavy beating of her heart?
The door crashed open, and there stood Lady Madeline of Usher, blood on her robes, appearing as though some bitter struggle had happened upon her emaciated frame. The two men stood in horror with the realization of what Roderick Usher had been fearing all along. She'd been buried alive. For a moment she had stood there, trembling. Then with a cry fell upon her brother. Her violent and final death agonies bore him to the floor, a corpse, and a victim to the terrors he had anticipated. Norman fled aghast from the chamber in the mansion. The storm was still raging as he found himself crossing the old causeway.
What? What's that light behind me? The house! It looks like a full red moon! But how? It's exploding! It's being sucked up!
There was a long shouting sound like the voice of a thousand waters, and the deep and dark tarn at Norman's feet closed over the fragments of the House of Usher.
Norman LeGrand was portrayed by Ron Margaretin. Lance Young played Roderick Usher. Steve Greenberg kind of sat around and announced. The valet was played by Don Miller. That little old man, the physician, was Steve Geary. Copied by Kathy Struck. Directed by Mac Rubernick. Engineered by Don Overton?
Ayaw!
Washington Irving's famous legend of Sleepy Hollow was first read by a delighted public 150 years ago. This writer gave America her first legends. The church stands today, as Irving described it, and automobiles rattle over the Headless Horseman's Bridge on their way to Tarrytown, which, by the way, was named by the housewives of the neighborhood because of the habit of their husbands to linger in the village tavern there on market days. Nearby is the little valley of Sleepy Hollow, a place bewitched. Some say that an old Indian chief held his powwows there before Master Henry Hudson discovered the spot. Some say it was a famous meeting place of witches after they were driven out of New England, and you can still hear their voices in the air high above the treetops. But everyone in Sleepy Hollow agreed on one thing, and that was the headless ghost of a Hessian trooper on horseback. His head had been shot off by a cannonball, and he roamed the valley on windy nights. Many worthy citizens had heard him, and not a few had actually seen him with their own eyes. Of all the legends that hung about, This was the legend of Sleepy Hollow. Sleepy Hollow was presided over by Ichabod Crane. He was tall and lank, with hands that dangled a mile out of his sleeves and feet that might have served for shovels. He had huge ears, large glassy green eyes, and a long snipe nose like a weathercock, and when he strode along the profile of a hill on a windy day, one might have taken him for a scarecrow eloped from the cornfield. But in his small empire bounded with log walls, he ruled supreme.
Silence, children. I observe that Master Yost Van Houten is more than usually industrious with his slate. Come forward, Master Yost, and let us all admire your handiwork.
Thanks, teacher. I don't want to go.
You will bring me your slate at once, Master Yost. Thank you. What have we here? You would draw a caricature of your teacher, would you, Master Yost? Read aloud what you have written.
Teacher's man, I am glad I know what'll please him.
Go on.
A bottle of wine to make him shine, I can drink him and tassel to tease him.
I have ever borne in mind the golden maxim, spare the rod and spoil the child. I would not on any account have Master Yost Van Houten spoiled. You will hold out your hand, Master Yost.
I don't wanna. No.
I am only doing my bounden duty to your good parents, Master Yost. There. It may smart now, my poetic young friend, but you will remember it and thank me for it in the longest day that you have to live.
Despite his stern discipline and his peculiar appearance, this schoolteacher was regarded as a man of great learning. He would quote Cotton Mather's History of Witchcraft by heart. He was the singing master of the Hollow and chanted the Psalms earnestly on Sundays. People say there are peculiar quavers still to be heard in the church which are legitimately descended from the long nose of Ichabod Crane. These accomplishments gave him the advantage over the country bumpkins in wooing the blooming Katrina Van Tassel, daughter of the wealthiest Dutch farmer in the neighborhood. On afternoons, when his scholarly duties were over, Ichabod would repair to the Van Tassel farmhouse. As he approached, a sort of barnyard symphony greeted his ears, the cooing of pigeons. Ichabod was always hungry, and he seemed to see the sleek pigs already on their platter with apples in their mouths. Turkeys gobbled through the farmyard. Stately squadrons of geese and ducks sailed by on the pond. And gallant hawks led their herons nearby. All these pleasant things Ichabod began to look upon with the eye of ownership, much to the discomfiture of Brom Van Brunt, a boistering blade who had also cast an approving eye on Katrinka. Here's Van Brunt talking to Katrinka, who is expecting Ichabod Crane to call at any moment.
For a silver halfpenny, I double him up and put him on the shelf. Plaque is spindle shanks.
Indeed, Master Brom, he may not be all muscle and fist, but he's a very learned man. They do say that he's read several books clean through.
What good ever comes from reading and writing? Can he whip any man in five counties like me?
He's teaching me to sing by the tuning fork. He says I have a beautiful voice.
He comes wooing your callers, and ollycock, and ginger cake, as much as anything.
He comes to see me. Now run along, Brom. I want no brawling in my parlor.
Don't fret. I won't lay my hands on a poor bag of bones like him. But let him take care.
A pleasant day, my friends.
It was pleasant till you came, schoolmaster. Good day.
You're not leaving. Well, apparently he was leaving. And how are you, Miss Katrinka, Always busy spinning, weaving, or baking some of your delicious little cakes? Such delicious cakes.
It's nice of you to praise him, Master Crane. Won't you try some of today's baking? This honey loaf and these donuts? And a bit of the new cheese and a glass of Father's cider.
Just a morsel. Just a trifle. Just a drop. I'm a light eater, Miss Katrinka. I take only enough to keep soul and body together.
But you must taste my apple cake, Master Crane, and a bit of this coffee kuchen. Here, let me fill up your glass, do.
Miss Katrinka, your charms have made a deep impression on my heart.
Oh, Master Crane, how do you talk?
Katrinka, there is something I must tell you. Oh, thank you to pass the peach preserves. Something I have been long hoping. Well, just a drop more cider, if you insist. Katrinka, I love you.
Yes. Here comes Mother. I'll be singing. Me.
Good day to you, Master Crane. I see you giving my girl a lesson.
Yes, indeed, Madam Van Tassel. Now give me A, Miss Katrinka.
Ah.
Ah.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, and now for the psalm of the next Sabbath.
By Babel's streams we sang and wept, while memory still to Zion clung. The winds alone our harp strings swept, which on the weeping willows hung.
Very nice, I'm sure. Well, I must run along to my poultry. Geese and ducks are foolish things, but girls can look after themselves.
Miss Katrinka, as I was saying,
Do, re, mi, fa, so, I love you.
Do, re, mi, fa, so, la. This is so sudden, Master Crane.
Your virtues exceed my fondest hopes. Just how large is the farm, Miss Katrinka?
300 acres.
300 acres? Miss Katrinka, I adore you. Tell me you'll be Mrs. Ichabod Crane.
You must give me time to think it over. I'll give you your answer.
When?
Come next Friday week at our quilting frolic. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la.
Next Friday week. The days passed slowly for our impatient lover. Already in anticipation, Ichabod saw himself master of the 300 acres. To pass the time until the quilting bee, he reread Cotton Mather's book on witchcraft from cover to cover. He remained at his desk in the log schoolhouse one evening so late that it was pitch dark when at last he walked homeward. Now, Ichabod's appetite for the marvelous and supernatural was almost as great as his appetite for Katrinka's crullers. No tale was too horrible for him. He believed implicitly in all that he read of witches, goblins, ghosts, as well as the legends of the countryside. As he walked homeward through the hollow, his teeth began to chatter, and the ordinary sounds of the night took on spectral terrors.
Ooh, what a spooky night. Just the night for the headless horseman to ride. What if I should meet him? Sounds like an owl, but it might be a witch. There was an old Nance Didwiddle of Salem and Bess of Bedlam, she that curdled the cow's milk and put burrs in the baby's hair. Oh, mercy on us, what a dreadful sound. Some poor homeless ghost, I make no doubt. Get back to your grave, do, that's a good ghost. What a black night. Not a single star. Ooh, there goes one now, shooting across the sky. A falling star means death. There was that black cat I met yesterday. That's a sure sign of trouble. Oh, is that a bullfrog or a hunt?
Poor Ichabod's teeth rattled so dreadfully that the crickets heard the sound and discussed it among themselves. Finally came the evening of the quilting frolic at Mynheer Van Tassel's. Ichabod wanted to arrive in style at the house of his lady love. He borrowed a horse from the farmer, a broken-down old plow horse named Gunpowder, but with one eye, and that one with viviousness.
On this steed he presented a curious figure. He rode with short stirrups, which brought his bony knees up to the pommel of the saddle, and the motion of his arms was like the flapping of black wings. Such was the romantic figure that arrived presently at Mynheer Van Tassel's farmhouse to find the merrymaking in full swing.
Evening. Fall to and help yourself to the victuals.
What a bounteous repast! Apple and pumpkin pies, broiled shad and roasted chicken, preserved plums and peaches from my own trees. Ah, I would say your own trees, Master Van Tassel.
If Miss Katrinka will be my partner.
God bless Ichabod!
Yeah, Ichabod!
You'd think it was St. Vitus himself clattering on the floor. He's put together so loose he'll fall apart if you don't watch out.
Woo. Ah, Von Brunt, you got a pretty Bible for Katrinka's hand, eh?
They say the schoolmaster is counting his chickens before they hatch.
Look at him all over!
You wait and see. I'll fix him. I'll fix him.
Bravo, Ichabod!
Hey, yeah! Bring in the hot toddy. Fall to, neighbors. You've got a cold ride home.
Ah, that's the stuff to pull a heart into a man.
Give me a few bumpers of Fred Van Tassel's hot toddy and I'll laugh at the headless horseman himself.
The headless horseman? Has he been seen of late?
Yeah, just tell it out, old bro. I'm not the horseman. I hear you. You don't believe in me, you says the ghost. That I don't, says old bro. Then I think you're the humbug. Well, that he phantom caught him for such a ride as never was. Then with a clap of thunder, he turned into a skeleton and flung old bro into a brook. That'll teach you not to believe in honest ghosts, says he, as he disappeared.
Do tell. I've never heard that.
What a thing to happen to a body.
Ah, that's nothing. I met the headless horseman myself the other night, coming home from Terrytown.
Yeah, coming back from the old flowing bull tower, and you'd see anything.
No, I was sober enough. I offered to race the ghost to the inn for a bowl of punch, and I had have won the race, too. But as we got to the bridge by the churchyard, he vanished into a ball of fire.
A ball of fire? The Sleepy Hollow Bridge by the churchyard, you say? And tonight I have to cross it.
If you get by Major Andre's hanging tree alive, you mean, schoolmaster. They do say the goings on around that tree, the wailings and groanings, they're terrible these nights.
Well, ghosts or no ghosts, I've got to be getting home. I got a barn full of cows to milk at cockcrow.
That's right. Me too.
Goodbye, friends. Thanks for the quilting. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. I want to speak a word to your lovely daughter before I depart, Master Van Tassel. You, given pretty much to her wishes, I take it.
I love that lass even better than my pipe, schoolmaster, and I have just one rule in bringing her up. Let her have her own way.
Good. Ah, Miss Katrinka, Miss Katrinka, may I speak with you apart?
Have you brought your tuning fork, Master Crane? I don't know as we know how to talk without that.
What passed at this interview, I wouldn't pretend to say, but something must have gone very wrong, for Ichabod sallied forth after a while with a crestfallen air. Ah, these women! Ichabod went to the barn without any of his former proprietary airs, kicked poor Gunpowder awake, and set off through the hills.
Get up, you crow's bait. Heaven have mercy on us. What's the matter with the critter? Giddy up, consarn you, you one-eyed, knock-kneed, sway-backed son of Balaam. It's the hanging tree. He sees the tree where they hung Andre. Come, come, gunpowder. If we're to get home before the cock crow, we've got up to get up to the tree somehow. I'll whistle to keep your courage up. Ooh, even the echo mocks me tonight. Oh, what was that?
Ichabod. Ichabod Crane.
Who wants Ichabod Crane? I see it now, waiting beside the road. Man on horseback. Perhaps it's just one of those revelers going home from Van Tassel's. I'll speak to him. Good evening, friend. More than a mortal, a psalm tune ought to drive him away.
Praise God from whom all blessings flow.
Far from the tomb.
There goes that echo again, mocking me. Oh, mercy, mercy. He's riding alongside. Friend, since you don't seem disposed to be civil, I'll just take my time to leave you. Get up, gunpowder. He's close to my heels. Very well, friend. I have no mind to be sociable myself, so I'll just drop behind if you don't mind. He won't let me lag behind. Well, here comes that moon out from under the cloud. Now I'll get a glimpse of his face. He hasn't any head. He's a headless horseman himself, and he's carrying his head alongside him on the saddle. Get up, gunpowder!
Away then they dashed, stones flying at every bound. Ichabod's flimsy garments fluttering in the air as he stretched his long, lank body over the horse's head in the eagerness of the flight.
Oh, there's the church bridge ahead, gunpowder. Ghosts can't survive churches. Reach the bridge and we're safe. Cock crow. Ghosts always vanish at cock crow. Let's see. He's gone. He hasn't vanished. He's right behind. He's going to throw his head at me. Ah!
Ichabod endeavored to dodge the horrible missile, but too late. It encountered his cranium with a tremendous crash. He was tumbled headlong into the dust, and Gunpowder the Black Steed and the Goblin Rider passed by like a whirlwind. The next morning, the old horse was found without his saddle and without the bridle under his feet, soberly cropping the grass at his master's gate. Ichabod did not make his appearance at breakfast. Dinner hour came, but no Ichabod. The boys assembled at the schoolhouse and strolled idly about the banks of the brook, but no schoolmaster. An inquiry was set on foot, and after diligent investigation they came upon his traces. In one part of the road leading to the church was found the saddle trampled in dirt, the tracks of the horse's hoofs deeply dented in the road, and evidently at furious speed, were traced to the bridge, beyond which, on the bank of a broad part of the brook, where the water ran deep and black, was found the hat of the unfortunate Ichabod, and close to it a shattered pumpkin. The brook was searched, but the body of the schoolmaster was not to be discovered. The mysterious event caused much speculation at the church on the following Sunday. Knots of gazers and gossips were collected in the churchyard, at the bridge, and at the spot where the hat and pumpkin had been found. The stories of Brouwer, Van Brunt, and a whole budget of others were called to mind, and when they had diligently considered them all and compared them with the symptoms of the present case, they shook their heads and came to the conclusion that Ichabod had been carried off by the galloping Hessian. As he was a bachelor and in nobody's debt, nobody troubled his head any more about him. The school was removed to a different quarter of the hollow, and another pedagogue reigned in his stead. It is true, an old farmer who had been down to New York on a visit several years after, and from whom this account of ghostly adventure was received, brought home the intelligence that Ichabod Crane was still alive, that he had left his neighborhood partly through fear of the goblin, and partly in mortification at having been suddenly dismissed by the heiress. That he had changed his quarters to a distant part of the country, had kept school and studied law at the same time. He had been admitted to the bar, turned politician, electioneered, written for newspapers, and finally had been made a justice of the 10-pound court. Van Brunt, too, who shortly after his rival's disappearance conducted the blooming Katrinka in triumph to the altar, was observed to look exceedingly knowing whenever the story of Ichabod was related, and always burst out into some hearty laugh at the mention of the pumpkin, which led some to suspect that he knew more about the matter than he chose to tell. The old country wives, however, who are the best judges of these matters, maintain to this day that Ichabod was spirited away by supernatural means, and it is a favorite story often told about the neighborhood round the winter evening fire. The bridge became more than ever an object of superstitious awe, and that may have been the reason why the road has been altered of late years so as to approach the church by the border of the mill pond. The schoolhouse, being deserted, soon fell to decay and was reported to be haunted by the ghost of the unfortunate pedagogue. And the plowboy, loitering homeward of a still summer evening, has often fancied his voice at a distance, chanting a melancholy psalm tune among the tranquil solitudes of Sleepy Hollow. The characters were Ed O'Brien as Ichabod Crane, Jenny Yoakum as Katrinka Van Tassel, John Reese as Mynheer Van Tassel, Pam Cassida as Madam Van Tassel, Jay Russell as Brom Van Brunt and Master Joost Van Houten, and Robin Johnson as a student and voices at the Quilting Frolic. The producers were Lou Sturm and John Reese, and the director was Jay Russell. This is Gary Gardner, your announcer, and you've been listening to The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. This has been a production of Holiday Play Productions, a part of Special Productions at KCPR Radio 91 in San Luis Obispo. This program has been pre-recorded.